not leaving.
It's illegal to sleep everywhere that there's people.
But where do they sit? I mean, you...
Now, Keith's reference to without a blanket and without a sleeping bag refers to the original proposal made by Don Lane in the spring of last year, when he finally, after 27 or 28 odd years of presenting himself as some champion of the homeless, came around to the view and publicly supported the idea that the sleeping ban itself was wrong and had to be changed. But because he didn't really want to go too far... He did what essentially Tim Fitzmaurice did 20 years ago, another council member, a very articulate, poetic sort of fellow who was a part of the Green Reform Movement. He was a Green Party member. He actually became mayor around in 2001 for that year on the city council. And he, along with others, finally proposed a measure that the sleeping ban be eliminated, but only in certain areas and only if you slept outside without bedding and without a sleeping bag and without a blanket. I know, that sounds absurd. But I guess the theory was you didn't want to encourage people to sleep outside, and you wanted to somehow pass a measure that people would support without feeling that they were... inviting an onslaught of homeless people to rush to Santa Cruz to take advantage of the wonderful prospect of sleeping on concrete on the sidewalk at night. Because if you can have a sleeping bag, well, I mean, that could make it terribly comfortable, right? I don't want to necessarily attribute that directly to Tim Fitzmaurice or to Don Lane, although those were the proposals that they initially pushed. It was actually modified at City Council before it was voted down 5-2, and nothing more was ever heard about it from those politicians. And those politicians never showed up at the Freedom Sleepers sleep out as protesters, and never came up with any kind of subsequent statements suggesting further avenues of support for the most basic human rights issues for homeless people outside, the right to survive without being harassed by the police department if they have no other options.
I come around 8:30 at night, and I walk around, and there's that poor woman who's a hefty one. She's got one little fish. Where does she go?
She just actually sleeps on that shit on the bench where you see her. No, it's illegal.
But they don't arrest
her. These people did get arrested. Have you ever been bothered by the police?
I've been asked to move along.
Yeah.
But I've never been given a ticket or anything.
Some people get 100 tickets for sleeping. And then we used to have the River Street the emergency shelter, but that got shut down.
You know, it takes money, and nobody wants to put money in it.
And, you know, Robert and I were here in the 80s going, why don't we have affordable housing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we would go to city council and say, like, why don't we start investing in
affordable housing?
$6 million
to house the homeless. Yeah,
we need to do that.
And actually, my position, although I'm a fan of affordable housing and a minimum, guaranteed minimum income, and probably far more than that, was when I was organizing in Santa Cruz in the late 80s. Simply stop busting people for sleeping until there are legal places for them to go. And it was a relatively straightforward proposition, made, you know, to me, eminent sense. I think it garnered significant support, but among those who were in power, it didn't. Now, you know, why is that? Well, aren't these wonderful Democrats? Aren't these great progressives? And the answer is, it's a class issue. These are people concerned with their class interests. Their property is worth a certain amount of money. Their neighbors' opinions for those who live on the West Side is worth something, too. They want to make sure they stay in office with votes that if they start supporting the rights of lower-income people, they're going to be suddenly arrayed against more massive financial forces that are opposing them. And... that really was, I think, the reason that you didn't get that you haven't gotten a saner position from people on the Santa Cruz City Council who claimed to be progressives. And when the progressives in Santa Cruz were in power from the mid-80s until at least about 10 years ago. So, and during that time, they took no action to meaningfully change the sleeping ban law. And it's partially it has to do also with the power of the police department and the power of those who support the police department, which has become more powerful, unfortunately, rather than less in the last decade.
Then we need to take the drugs and,
and
the mental thing, because I hear them sounding, they need help, these guys.
Yes.
Ronald Reagan closed all
there's an interesting story about that. That was actually a law passed by John F. Kennedy, right?
No, this was Ronald Reagan when he was governor.
Well, this is how it worked. Kennedy's sister was in a really terrible place in Massachusetts. Helped with the people there, and it was horrible. And he wanted to have halfway houses, but to win the vote, he had to have support of the state's rights and stuff. So then, you're right, Reagan was supposed to take the federal money and spend it on halfway houses
and local people,
and they never did that anywhere in the United States, basically. They essentially just...
Yeah.
So Reagan is the most famous for that, but almost every state actually never... And then Kennedy got killed before he could lobby for the rest of that.
You know, I'm not really sure if that is either a complete or a completely accurate accounting of the famous tale of how there was a lot of deinstitutionalization. People had been held in miserable conditions and warehoused asylums, in essence, were released. That requires a whole show and probably some more research on my part about who did what when. I've done a lot of partial research on that throughout the last few decades, but we need to actually get into that issue more clearly to understand the history and also to understand the dangers of the stigmatizing of people with mental health, so-called mental illness conditions, as well as where mental illness is becoming defined as you're not taking your meds and a doctor has told you to, as though that's some sort of cure for what your condition is. And in fact, I've had numerous shows with writer and researcher Robert Whitaker in the past, in which he presents persuasive evidence, really unrefuted evidence, that those folks who are chronically using psychiatric medications have a less chance of long-term recuperation than those who actually never had the medications at all or who had them and then gradually came off of them. And there have been studies done by the World Health Organization about the situation in different countries as well. I've never heard a persuasive rebutting of the data he's presented, but it is so ingrained in us and the institutional psychiatry that is considered to be the highest wisdom in our society and Western society, a lot of it anyway, at least among mainstream groups, that it's kind of become a matter of, yeah, we know the earth is flat. I mean, the king has said so. I mean, it's clear you're going to sail off the edge of the world. In other words, if it is accepted and repeated over and over again, we have to be in Iraq. We've got to go in there and fight in Syria. It's really important to be doing that bombing in Somalia and Sudan and Yemen and Afghanistan because, Bush may have started it and Obama may have escalated it, but now we're there and we've, that sort of thing. There's a whole series, at least I regard all of these things as myths, which have become sort of common wisdom when it's actually common mythology, and I think common foolishness.
Every state for actually never, and then Kennedy got killed before he could lobby for the rest of the.
And the thing is, we're such a rich country.
Yeah, and we're a really rich town. I mean,
oh yeah,
like
yeah.
Google could spend like one fraction of one penny percentage of their total profit.
So where's their
and
social
build
conscience?
Like a huge giant.
See that empty lot over there?
Yeah, the old bookstore.
All right, well.
You're going to change all this.
Yeah, you're going to join us, right? So, and then you can fill out a postcard and put it in here. And people are writing postcards to the postmaster, which we will then.
Well, you know, I really don't know where I stand with your thing because I don't know of any improvement in health. With what you've done.
There's
from the
these
beginning.
People. There's these people that have no food otherwise.
And
they
it's probably
they could go to bed feeling like they had something to eat.
If they had a bed to go to.
Well,
you know
if they
I
had
mean?
Well, we all wish we had a bed to go to.
Yeah.
I'm staying at the Salvation Army right now and
oh,
I had a stroke a week ago and they threatened to throw me out last night, said I was stomping around and I can barely move my feet.
You know what? There's a lot of homeless now in front of City Hall. Have you noticed?
I've noticed because I camp out there.
Right. Well, yeah, why did the city fathers see this? It's right there.
That's
the
why we're there. They can't see it. Well, they see it, but they just think the people can just go away.
Yeah.
So, Sherry, you have an idea of starting a protest on April 7th when the winter program closes. There'll be another 100 people out on the street.
Yeah.
And I suggest that she talk to you about
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Well, come every Tuesday to the City Hall.
And how old
we
is that baby?
We give out free meal and we all sleep out there.
And this proposal that there be a protest beginning April 7th when the second of the two winter shelter programs closes, which Sherry, who's a disabled woman of about 70 or more in a wheelchair, who was speaking to Keith and myself, and I guess the postal employee woman who came and went in front of the post office, she also showed up at the last two Huff meetings and brought a friend with her, and they're concerned about having, if not just a protest, establishing a place for people to go once the armory closes down. Or I should say the armory. It's no longer the armory. It's these two places that people have been using as winter shelter. So that's it's a hot issue that not just activists who are in their warm houses like myself are talking about, but it's also quite understandably in the minds of folks who are going to be severely impacted by the shutting down of the shelter. And these are the folks who will make the decisions once the shelter shuts down, where they will go, and with the police, when the police come, whether they will keep coming back, whether they will deal with those issues, or how they will deal with those issues. And there are different kinds of strategies that have been used in the past. The future is unknown. We'll see what happens.
And the raging grannies have been talking about taking the fence down.
Well, here, this is the guy to talk to.
Yeah, well,
you have a potential victim.
Oh, I just wanted to get involved with cleaning up.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, we cook at India Joe's every Saturday and Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
And if you want, you can sign up and get our email.
Great.
And then we come down here at about 3:30. We set up and we serve at 4 Saturdays and Sundays. That's a lot of fun.
Cool. Thanks.
I'm sorry.
Kids are cute.
No, that's for your kids, that other kid.
There we go.
That's right.
Well, that's because it's your court, right?
Yeah, that's a particularly cute kid.
No, that's totally objective.
So. Yeah,
you're
I respect you.
And
I was cute.
The hat. It's pretty clear.
My kid's cute. My cute little girl.
Okay, great.
Well, you're clearly a Marxist here.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. I'm more of a Groucho. This is about the homeless civil rights group you're interested in. This,
okay.
This is on the radio. We do a radio show.
So, the homeless people are upset because they used to stay there, right?
Yeah, particularly in the rain. Everyone, there was like 30 people up there when it rained. And then when it rained, that's where we share the meal, is up there. And,
construction area.
It's not really that. And what we, according to the newspaper yesterday, the post office says they're going to, this is going to be here until they can make a more permanent fence to keep people from being up there.
This is the specific his approach, his beliefs about it.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
It's demented, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they, you know,
I get it. I guess that they don't want everyone hanging out. You know, it's the post office.
Yeah, but the reality is that the people mostly hang out once it's closed. In my
right. No, that's true. There's not really people here.
And
the last time she was here, I mean, some guy with Tourette's was cussing her out. She's carrying the baby.
Yeah.
If I had been here, I probably would have done something I shouldn't have done.
Right.
You know, and it's like,
so there's that.
I don't. I believe in the commons. We need to have the commons. But that's also bullshit. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, the
what's
one guy
that guy did that.
Oh, right.
You know.
Yeah, when it becomes threatening, like, the guy was just walking around, and he was, like, screaming things, and then, and I saw him, and I kind of, like, I had a baby, so I'm, like, kind of trying to avoid him, and then he, like, right when he was walking by, he just, and he had already looked me in the eye, and so then he looked me in the eye again, and he's like, just screaming, and I was like,
oh, it's weird. We have Julie, who is a friend of ours. He's the most vulgar, horrible. Oh, my God. But she's never that way with me anymore. But to our volunteers, you go, we're just looking at my poop.
I think I've seen her too, brown hair.
Well, and she's got the dog, and she just, no, she always has a big part in that, and a really beautiful picture.
Oh, she's dressed.
She's dressed.
Oh, yeah, she's pretty.
And
horrible.
Yeah. And, but the word now,
oh,
but once you
get. She says such sweet things to me whenever I see her.
Yeah, and then sometimes, right now, for like the last like 6 months, I've been having these amazingly complex, lucid, totally normal conversations with her. But then she'll turn from me and she'll just start swearing at somebody like, you're just trying to break. And then and you're just like, oh my God. And then she's back to me like, yeah, you know, when I went to Harvard, it was like this, you know. So she's like, actually, whatever. I don't know. You're just like,
oh my God.
You know about like quantum physics and you're like yelling obscenities at these poor people.
Whoa, that's
and
crazy.
And it's really
like
a weird thing. And then Tony, Tony might be the guy that's threatening.
I'm Robert, by
the way. I don't know. He lives here?
He walked down the street.
Yeah, but these are like, they're actually just, people lost it. But Tony was treating me, he was threatening to kill me for like days. And then I'm like, what's up, Tony, man? Are you doing better today? And he like started talking to me and tells me his whole life story. And he's completely lucid. And before that, I would have never known he could even have a normal conversation. And now he and I are best buddies, you know.
And what's
and
the name of this young baby?
Probably
it's Orion.
Ryan.
Orion.
Orion.
He might be a constellation.
He was angry that they stole all of his blankets and stuff. And then once he calmed down and I started always talking to him, and he just went to his back, he just started going, you know, I own a contracting company. And I used to build all these huge buildings, and even beautifully.
And I bought. How did it become? Like, I always
want
to know the story.
Well, in his case, he ended up, the IRS eventually took his business. He lost all his money, and his wife flipped out when he went bankrupt and left him. And then he actually regrouped. That was like in 97 or something, and then he got it together by 2003, and he started another contracting business, and he actually was building some more buildings. It was like another, I don't know how big by that time what he was building for, but then the IRS seized his property again, and then that was the end of it. Now he's living out there. So another acquaintance of mine
in San Francisco was the president of a small oil company in Houston.
And what Keith is telling, and it's kind of hard to hear because of all the traffic noise, is a series of stories of people that he's run into who seem outrageous in their behavior at times and their language, because this is what this couple with the baby came up and complained about, that, you know, they're concerned about there should be a commons and there should be people should be allowed to sleep somewhere. I'm not perhaps quoting them accurately, but there's a general sympathy. But there's also this sense of apprehension and anger that the next minute someone could turn to you and start denouncing you and saying fuck you and so forth. And unfortunately, the recording is not very good, but I wanted to catch some of Keith's narrative about his experiences with the people who initially were very abusive to him and then became helpful at Food Not Bombs and revealed their rather educated, if you find that to be of value, background and so forth. Unfortunately, we're going to have to skip a lot of this because it's bad radio, and I kind of apologize for making you sit through it, if you did, but that was the reason.
Antonio, and we've been listening to Keith McKenna of March 2017.
You know what?
So I'm outside the vet hall. It's Vet Service Day. Wednesday is 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. There's meal service at noon, medical outreach, harm reduction, housing services, jobs. I heard there actually have been some actual positive services here. And it was a man with a dog and a cart, and he himself is in a wheelchair. How's it going, man?
All right.
How are the vets treating you?
Okay.
You got groceries.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
Not very.
Okay. No problem, man. Well, right on. You got Cherie into the vet's hall, although maybe she could have walked in herself without any problem, but
and Cherie is the woman, one of the women who was having a conversation earlier, a woman who is concerned if what's going to happen when the winter shelter program closes. She's been a user of it. And she wants to see some kind of either protest or additional area where people can camp or go. And she also, she turned and had to discontinue the conversation because she needed to go use a restroom, which in the nearest one was some distance away. There are plenty of restrooms in the area, but they don't allow, first of all, she's disabled and in a wheelchair. She has a wheelchair with her, but she's also kind of hobbling and walking as she goes. I asked a man coming out of the vet's hall if they would escort her in, if he would escort her in, and he kind of looked me up and down and then finally agreed, and apparently the vet's hall let her use the restroom. That was an issue that I used to raise, a decade ago when the vet's hall was a much more open place. And some of the managers wanted to keep out homeless people from using the bathrooms, or even just the general public from using the bathrooms. And there were others in the vet's hall who felt differently, were happy to have people come in and use the bathroom as long as they didn't misuse the bathroom. And now, of course, I don't think the vet's hall is, I don't consider it to be a place for people who are just ordinary non-vets can go and use the bathroom, even though it's a pretty big, spacious bathroom on the first floor of the building. I think it's disabled accessible. Who knows? Maybe there was county money that went into it. I don't know about that. And it's now, of course, considered as the site I mentioned earlier in the broadcast that Steve Plaich, who is with the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, I should say, is the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, and so describes himself, as well as Paul Lee, who's a regular, if not speaker, supporter of the Penny University, as it's still called that. It happens every Monday night right next to the Calvary Episcopal Church homeless meal or coffee house meal. and usually has about 10 or 20 people attending it, some speakers from the left usually coming and chatting. Anyway, they want, as I mentioned before, to Lee and Plate, you're talking about setting up some kind of small shelter program once the main program closes down in at the end of this month and in the beginning of April. And in a way, it's sort of a strategic decision, which it's the strategic time to propose it, because given particularly the kinds of protests that have been going on, which neither of them have given a lot of support to. Steve has been putting up weekly Facebook photos about the protests, and good for him. Just as I've been occasionally doing, well, every week I was doing an account of the protest, or a calendar announcement about the protest. That's now been taken over by Keith. And, of course, that's a great idea for those people who are vulnerable and in the program and are going to be even more vulnerable on the streets. But, of course, much more is needed, in the sense that you need to be support people who are going to be and are currently gathering on the streets in encampments of their own, as is happening in all the major cities up and down the coast. And some of the things that have been proposed are clean and sober campgrounds along the lines of First They Came for the Homeless, or Brent Adams' proposed Sanctuary Village, or just support for encampments as they are existing up in Oakland, which is got some funding from the city supposedly till the end of March, but maybe, or maybe it was the beginning of March, I'm not sure, but it's probably still there under the freeway. And my claim has always been that, you know, there should be simply a private effort or a public effort to provide porta-potties, garbage bags, trash pickups, and the city should be funding this for homeless encampments, because that's where people are living, and that's the reality of it. And it's a matter of public health and safety to do that. Not to mention, I mean, you can say compassion all you want, but it's just a matter of common sense. And simply proposing a small program for, I don't know, 30 or 40 people. I'm not sure if it's 20 or 70. It's a small program, because you might get somewhere, because there'll be pressure on the city at this point to do it. I understand the practical reasons to propose it at this time, because, hey, they're coming out of their shelter, and look, you don't want them to join all those protesters at City Hall, do you? Now's a good time to get some shelter for them, and I, you know, agree, but it's kind of along the lines of, let's get rid of the protest by buying off the leaders. Let's stop the protest movement by doing a so-called cleanup, but at the same time insisting we're providing social services for them, but only for a very, very limited period of time, but enough to catch the public's attention while they're watching, and soon they'll turn away and we can just ignore them and dump them wherever they happen to be and drive them out in the usual manner, although the usual manner does not seem to be working too well.
Yeah, this kindly vet did take her in.
Why don't we just at least have a campground that's safe?
Yeah, or any kind of. Yeah, just like make it so.
There's so many empty buildings, too.
Free radio here.
Oh, am I talking on the radio?
If you want.
Bring back church and stuff, genius.
Any building will do.
Yeah, there's a lot of empty buildings.
Yeah. What about 75 River Street?
That's Wells Fargo.
What's happening there?
It's fenced off, and homeless people sleep on the outside, and you know, it's sometimes. I haven't seen much recently. And so you're a local. You've been around for a while.
I've been here since 71.
And what's your first name?
Alma.
And Alma, what changes have you seen that you want to talk about?
I hate that sculpture.
You're talking about the weird dinosaur across the street, yeah.
You know, I like the timeless quality, and that just looks like a toy. An ugly toy.
The Museum of Modern Art just showed up.
If it was a giant, I'd step on it.
Oh. You don't like this fence either, I think.
Boy, it's ugly.
Oh, yeah.
It's ugly. I know it's important, but there's... There's just not enough care for the homeless.
But it was important for. Now, I don't see any construction. It's been up for 5 days now, I think.
There's my ride.
And you take care, Elma.
Thank you.
All right. Anything you wish to say for Free Radio?
I need to say.
Okay.
And the fence has now been up for what? That was... So now it's been almost 2 weeks the fence has been up. I think it was put up 2 weeks ago tomorrow. You're tuned to Free Radio. That is to say, the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org. My name is Robert, and this will be the second half of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, twice-weekly show coming up. If you want to catch me off air, give me a call at 423-4833. If you have news tidbits or some reflections on what you've heard or some disagreements with what you've heard or some new information, please give me a call, 423-4833. Was Hope Dies Last by Ryan Harvey.
So it's about 1:15 on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, for those of you who believe in green things. Also the anniversary of the Kronstadt Rebellion. However, that's another story. I'm talking here in front of City Hall with...
Dreamcatcher.
And Dreamcatcher is here, as I understand, hoping to talk to Martine Bernal, the actual real power of the city, or the shitty manager, as I like to call him. A number of us came down, as others apparently too, to talk to Councilwoman Sandy Brown, who is reportedly ill and so not making it in. But Dreamcatcher is a problem because many weeks ago, I don't know, how many weeks now, do you know?
Four.
And before we hear more of the specifics of Dreamcatcher's dilemma, which may have been resolved, actually, I want to point out that Sandy Brown supposedly or reportedly has office hours from 1 to 3 on Fridays. So since the show is going out on Thursday night, if you want to visit Councilwoman Sandy Brown, you can presumably just show up at 1 o'clock, as I did. Of course, I did that only to find that I was told she was ill. And though she knew I was coming because I'd emailed her, I got no response suggesting don't show up because I'm not going to be there. That likewise was a problem for activists Pat Colby and Dreamcatcher, who also wanted to chat with Councilwoman Sandy Brown. I usually hold council members running on a platform of alleged progressive goals like rent control and basic human rights for homeless people, which I think was one of the planks of Brown's platform. She ran with three other people, two of whom got elected, she and Chris Crone, two of whom didn't, Drew Glover and Steve Schnarr. But I expect progressives to, probably rather naive of me, obviously rather naive of me, to keep their word, or at least I guess I feel more justified in denouncing them when they don't. Perhaps that's because the people I know and have, and to some extent, either been working with or are friends with or just have a lot of interaction with or some interaction with have certain expectations of them. And when these expectations are not fulfilled, that is, say, when they break their word, then it's important that we hold them accountable if our political movement, our movement for human rights, is to mean anything. And not to pretend that, oh, we just have to wait another year, another 5 years, another 10 years, whatever. So anyway, Sandy Brown, 1 to 3, Fridays, supposedly. You can also call the City Council offices at 420-5020, which I think I'm going to do to try to, I may arrange another appointment or just clarify for all of you out there if, in fact, she is going to be available tomorrow at that time. Let's see if we can do that and see if we can get a hold of her. But we're dialing now. The City Council 420-5020 number.
Thank you for calling the City of Niagara's offices of the City Manager, City Clerk, and City Council. Please hold while we transfer your call. Thank you for calling the City of Santa Cruz. How may I direct your call?
Looking for Sandy Brown.
Okay, just one moment, please. She's not in the office, but I'm very happy to put you through to her voicemail.
Do that, please.
Okay, just one moment, please. Hi, you've reached the voicemail for Councilmember Sandy Brown. I'm sorry I couldn't take your call directly, but I will get back to you as soon as possible. Please just leave me a message and your phone number. Thank you.
Record your message at the tone. When you are finished, hang up or press pound for more options.
Hi, Sandy. This is Robert Norris calling you on Thursday. You may recall that we had a meeting kind of scheduled for last Friday, and then I understand you were ill. There are a couple other people who wanted to come. I think I let you know about this in several emails and also sent you some requests that, you know, you let me know if I'm barking up the wrong tree, if you're interested, and so forth. Haven't heard from you. So please at least do me the courtesy of an email back or a phone call. I'm at 420-5... I'm sorry, I'm at 423-4833. You're at 420. 423-4833. or give me an email at rnorris3 at hotmail to let me know whether you will be, in fact, available from 1 to 3 tomorrow, and if not, when you will be. I'm putting this out on free radio so that other folks can be best advised as to how to reach a city council member like yourself. Thanks. Now, I don't want to give anybody the misimpression. I'm now no longer talking to Sandy Brown, but just generally to you folks out there. I don't want to give anybody the misimpression that actually contacting city council members is likely to lead you anywhere. But it may be an important part of a broader movement that where you're showing that you are, in fact, a reasonable person trying to pursue established methods of communication, but apparently not getting anywhere, so that you need to take the next step. Next steps are things like showing up with massive numbers of people at public meetings, even city council meetings, though that can be very restrictive unless you have really enough people to overcome the traditional restraints that city council rules and the authoritarian policies of the mayor and her police force put upon you when you enter those chambers, or when you try to enter those chambers and find the door locked. In other words, it can be often more effective to show up at events with a large crowd of people and a demand that some actions be taken. If you are persistent and clear and unrelenting in what you do, you can actually sometimes at least get the power to back down slightly, as masses of people did, the demonstrators who marched to city council on February 14th. And demanded that the council allow people who had been abused in the February 13th ICE and SPCD raids on the various communities in our area to speak. What I was looking for from Sandy Brown, I don't, as I said, expect to get anywhere with her or with any of these council members, but it is important that people know what the issues are. And also, council members do have the option to take actions even if they don't have a council majority. That's often the kind of the mask or the excuse that council members use not to take action. But, for instance, I outlined for her 7 things that she could do. And one of those was to request the staff research the specific enforcement provisions that might be included in the sanctuary ordinance. That's the ordinance that says we're a sanctuary city, ICE, immigration control, or immigration customs enforcement, don't come after us. The police are not going to cooperate with you, and if they do, they're going to be held legally liable. That is not currently part of the sanctuary ordinance, as far as I know, and that could be at least researched. And I was suggesting that she find out if, in fact, other cities have done this or it's been proposed in other cities as ways of holding the police department accountable and thereby discouraging them from doing what they did on February 13th, colluding with the immigration attacks. Requested that she make a written request to the mayor that if there is ever an issue involving a large amount of public interest, that it be held, as has been the case in the somewhat distant past now, it be held in a larger venue, a larger building like the Civic Auditorium. That way they have no excuse for locking people out, shutting the doors, lining the walls with cops that then claim means they don't have enough space for ordinary non-uniformed folk. It was done on February 28th. So I asked her to make a specific request to the police department to show her all the correspondence that they had with the Department of Homeland Security or the customs enforcement folks for the last 2 months, and also anything that referenced the ICE embedded officer in their offices, that is, say, the immigration, customs, and enforcement guy who suddenly Chief Vogel revealed had been there since 2009, which he just, he had known about it, but he assumed that there would be no ICE actions against immigrants around documentation rather than against part of a so-called criminal roundup of people as part of the, what, M13 gang, which is what the subject was of the roundup and on February 13th. I attempted to get such documents. I was told there were no documents that were not under investigation. But since the city council has a public safety committee, so-called, headed by, or at least containing, Vice Mayor David Terrazas, she could request of Terrazas that he get these documents and share them with city council members. And as far as I know, she hasn't even, well, she hasn't responded to that yet. I haven't even gotten a peep out of her on that one. I've also requested that she request the DA's report and all witness statements around the Sean Arlt shooting by Officer Eric Bailey back in October. Because while the police chief did give his everything's okay report to a closed and selected number of reporters in a locked section of the police station last month, and that was then played as a video later, part of it anyway, we don't have the actual reports of the different witnesses, including both the police witnesses, the drive-along rider, the people inside the house, plus any other video and audio that might not have been mentioned by the chief. That's Chief Vogel, who's retiring in June and who is now being replaced through a committee of people, or actually the committee is going to, I think, advise Martine Bernal, the city manager, who will make the choice, rather than actually have any real say in it. It's not entirely clear how much say they will have. Steve Plaich, from his position as vice chair of the ACLU, will be on that board, but there's and so will Phil Kramer, the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But as far as I'm concerned, no strong advocates for real police control will be there. Steve Plaich has made some suggestions for a police review board. He's expressed concerns to me privately about a lot of these issues, but he seems to be more concerned, and I say this, well, I don't know, I was going to say more in sorrow than in anger, but I'm not happy with it, so it's a little hypocritical for me to claim that I'm just so piously peaceful about the whole thing. I don't like the fact that over the years he has accreted all these board of directors memberships, and yet has taken very little action on his board, and also has kept the boards rather opaque, that is, not transparent to the community when requests are made, and then also sometimes has run meetings. Well, there's a mixed record on that. These were requests to Sandy Brown, a council member, that I made in an email, and I requested she respond as to whether she was going to do any of these things. Again, all she has to do, as far as I'm concerned, is not get the council to make any changes. She hasn't got the votes for that. But to make a request for information in a written form that indicates that she is requesting the information. Then if they turn her down, then it's shame on them. But if she doesn't ask, it's shame on her. I've also requested that she restore the policy of providing at least, and this time in full, all the original claims against the city made by people who are seeking monetary damages from the city for some kind of bad action by the city. And I'm particularly interested, of course, in police abuses and abuses that impact poor and homeless people. But I think that as a matter of general community welfare, if somebody is making a claim against the city and it's going to be considered by the city council, it's a public document. It should be available for the members of the community to see on the city's website before the council meeting in question where that issue is discussed and the public has some chance to weigh in on it. Seems pretty reasonable to me. But Bren Lehr has refused to do that. In fact, she's now removed the entire claim. At one point, she put the claims up on the city council agenda at my urging, but redacted, that is to say, struck out, removed, covered over, whited out, all contact information for the people making the claims against the city. I know I was damaged by the officer so-and-so at such and such a time, and this, I'm seeking this, and this is what happened. And you might say, well, that's a matter of confidential information. You know, why you don't want to expose a person? Well, the answer is if a person's making a claim against the city, it's public. It's not confidential. What the people who really want